Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. You're going to find this is a fascinating program. Our guest today is Aziz Altai, and of course, he is a Muslim. He's a Shia Muslim, and he came from Iraq. He came here as a very young man, and he's been very, very successful. He's lived the American dream, and he has a very successful business centered on the East Coast. But, of course, he's still very concerned about his country. And so, without further ado, I want to welcome our special guest today, Aziz. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about a life under Saddam Hussein? Why it was that you picked up and came to the United States? Because certainly the stories we've heard about him of being a ruthless tyrant are absolutely true, aren't they?
Yeah, actually, life under the Saddam Hussein, the late Saddam Hussein regime, was very, very difficult. Actually, it's impossible almost to describe what is it like to live in Iraq under that regime. One of the things I can tell you, this late regime was one of the most fascist, the most racist, and the most aggressive dictatorship that the human history has witnessed. It was not very hard to get a reason for this regime, as you have seen on the TV screens lately of all these mass graves. It was very easy for the regime to kill anybody. He had so many security agencies, secret police, intelligence offices, many of these organizations. And at the end of his regime, when the people were requesting what happened to the 200,000 Iraqis were missing, he sent a letter to his intelligence headquarters asking them to see what the people are asking for, and they sent him a letter back. They told him, we don't know whom we killed. All what we can tell you is the number of the people we killed and where did we kill them, in what city of Iraq.
All right, fine. And so this was really a ruthless and tyrannical regime, as we've seen other ruthless and tyrannical regimes, but they used torture and they used... Why don't you tell the story about, I think, was it your cousin who was arrested because he didn't want to go off and fight in the Gulf War?
Well, yeah, I had a cousin when I was in Iraq. A cousin of mine, Mohammed, was arrested, and he was tortured. That was the one in Iraq when I was there, and also my brother-in-law. When I left, I heard that my other cousin, who is his younger brother, was arrested for refusing to fight in Kuwait. And 1 year after he was kidnapped, a mutilated body of his was delivered in a plastic bag to my aunt, and she was warned not to mourn him, and she was forced to pay money for the bullets they used to execute him with.
And didn't they actually chop him up into little pieces, or what did they do?
Yeah, they mutilated his body pretty much like that. You know, she got some pieces of a body in a bag.
Pieces of body in a bag. So this is what life was like in Iraq under Saddam Hussein. The thing that bothers me is that this wicked and evil man was actually helped by the American government during their Iran-Iraqi war. And we were providing with money and material equipment and all sorts of briefings and satellite pictures. And you have to ask why we would back anybody who is this inherently evil, and certainly he was. So we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Aziz Altai. And am I pronouncing that right?
Altai.
Altai. All right, fine. We'll be back here in just a moment as soon as we get back, bring in our other stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Aziz Altai, and Altai lived in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, and then, of course, you fled to the United States. How old were you?
When I left, I was 19 years old.
And, of course, what year was that?
And that was on March 19, 1983, which is coincidentally, it's the date that the liberation war started on Saddam this year.
As Saddam began to move against Iran, is that what you mean?
Yeah, the liberation war, the coalition forces started this liberation war of Iraq on March 19, 2003. I left Iraq on March 19, 1983. It took 20 years for me to see my dreams come true.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you, of course, tell us a little bit about, you came to America here, you didn't speak English, or didn't speak it very well, and you were able then, of course, within a relatively a short period of time to rise and make your own business here, weren't you? Could you have done this in Iraq if you'd stayed?
Well, there is one thing that people have to understand, and even though when we lived under that late regime, which oppressed all Iraqi people, Christians, Muslims, Jews, Turks, Arabs, Kurds, we still had the same feeling and the same, American people have is the love for freedom. We had that. Actually, I remember I and my teenager friends working hard, tried to be freedom fighters, try to get our freedom and regain it from that regime. So we share the same values as the human members of the human race with the American people as far as loving freedom and seeking freedom. You know, freedom is a God-given right to all the human race. It doesn't belong to one race or one people. When I came here, I basically felt that God has given me a new life, that I needed to be voice for the voiceless Iraqi people, that I needed to tell the people the stories, the horror stories of the late regime. I needed to tell people and speak out against that regime, even though it was considered an ally of the United States back then against Iran. And also in the college, some of the Saddam supporters or intelligence officers were posing as students actually videotaped me in Ohio.
In other words, Saddam had his agents here in the United
States. Exactly, and they were left unchecked because they were considered an ally.
In other words, they were the allies. America was the buddy-buddy with this ruthless tyrant. And, of course, he had his agents here, and they, of course, were checking on people such as yourself who were dissidents. Oh, we'll be back in just a moment to continue this story with Aziz Al-Tee. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Aziz Al-Tee, and of course, he had come to America. He was 19 years old, and of course, they had the Iraqi intelligence officers here monitoring him. They didn't want, of course, anybody pointing out to the American people that the United States was aligned with this ruthless tyrant who was killing people indiscriminately. Anybody who spoke out against him would be tortured and, in many instances, either incarcerated or executed. So pick up the story from there. You've come to America. You don't have a lot of money. You don't have much of any money, do you?
No, actually, I had. They only allow you to take 500 dinars back then. The dinar was $3.3, and I stayed in England for a few months. So I pretty much came here, like you said, with almost no money. My family sent me some money after that to study. And what happened to me is that even few months went by, and as I'm studying pre-requests for English courses in college in the University of Toledo in Ohio, one of these agents of Saddam videotaped me and sent that tape to Iraq of a presentation I gave in an English course criticizing the late regime of Saddam Hussein. And basically, the government there put my family under house arrest, and they told them that you cannot even send a penny to this guy anymore, that he has been working against what they call the revolution, and you know, it's pretty much like the communist terminologies.
Well, of course, basically, though, wasn't Saddam Hussein more or less a socialist? The Ba'ath Party was more or less socialist or Marxist?
Exactly. It was a socialist version of Arab nationalism, and that believed that that Arab nations can be one nation, pretty much depended on this ideology to try to build its rise to power. However, in real terms, in reality, really, Saddam was the only power.
Right.
There was no such a thing as Arab Socialist Party.
But of course, if you look, you strip all the idealism away from socialism, somebody's got to be in charge, and in this instance in Iraq, it was a man named Saddam Hussein. And he's even got his agents over here in the United States. Certainly our government knows the agents are here and they're not doing anything because he's our great ally in this battle against the Iranians, of course, because the Iranians are led by Ayatollah Khomeini. Only the trouble was that we'd toppled the Shah and allowed the Ayatollah to come to power. You'd think occasionally our State Department would make a mistake in our favor, but be that as it may. So then, of course, you were able to get through college and get an education, and what happened?
What happened is I came to work for an American corporation, and then I realized that even if I worked all my life, I would never get to the point which I want to be. Obviously, it's not easy to be an Iraqi, Arab, Muslim, Shia, young man coming here and trying to... we've been always stereotyped in the media so much as a race and as a religion for the last 20 years, and blamed for everything that happened in the world, get stereotyped for mistakes of that committed by international criminals and terrorists. So it was a big challenge. However, I have to say that only in this country I could have taken the challenge and start from zero and basically achieve a lot of my goals in business and in politics.
And of course, you have a good business now. You own a number of stores, is it? And they are you're sort of an executive at the present time.
Exactly. Yeah, I own a chain of retail stores, electronics and wireless and satellite.
Where else in America could that happen?
Actually, only America, because of the freedom we have, and there is no limit. The sky is the limit to somebody's ambitions.
Amen.
If you have a will, there is a way. If you have the determination, if you're willing to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, if you're willing to utilize the people's abilities and give people a chance to be the best they can be, that's what America is all about.
Amen to that. Well, anyway, of course, then, but when you were here and you had succeeded financially, you were still concerned about your people back in Iraq. So why don't you pick up the story from there, and you put together some sort of an organization of people who were over here to try to speak out against what was happening over there?
Early in the process, I was a member in 1983 when I first came. I became a member of the Islamic Union of Iraqi Students and IUIS. And in 1998, I founded the Iraqi American Council. Iraqi American Council basically is a non-government organization that seeks to empower Iraqi Americans here in this country and also connect the interests of the American people and the Iraqi people, promoting democracy in Iraq. Currently, I'm the chairman of the council.
All right, fine. And so basically this is an educational process. Now, of course, we hear a lot about a lot of these Iraqi organizations. There's one headed by a man named Shalabi. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, Dr. Ahmed Shalabi.
Shalabi, okay. Yeah. Dr. Shalabi. And, of course, he'd left there when he was very, very young. He came from a family that had been very, very well-to-do. And he was in Jordan. There's some questions about what he was doing in Jordan. But he seems to be backed by the Pentagon. There seems to be the Pentagon's choice, or is he the State Department's choice? I can never figure out which one it is.
Well, he is being supported by some elements in the Pentagon, the civilian branch of the Pentagon, like Wolfowitz and other officers.
And of course, they financed him. He has an entourage of 100 or a couple of hundred armed men. They flew him over there. But does he have any support in Iraq today among the common people?
The common people don't know him as much as we know him here in the West because of the media. However, for the Shia population in Iraq, they don't have too many choices as far as like secular liberal politicians. I have to say that Ahmed Shalabi is one of a handful Shia liberals that are available in the political arena in Iraq. I talked to Iraq today. I spoke to a young man, like 20 years old, and we were discussing things, and he was asking me what was my advice, whom should he support. He said, all these guys came from the outside, and I don't know whom to support. And he mentioned Ahmed Chalabi. Seems like the name he has a name recognition because his grandfather was a vice president in Iraq in the time of the king. And seems that, that name recognition is helping him in a way. What's hurting him is that Iraqis who are very poor have a big resentment of anybody who is rich or came from a rich background. And that Saddam has really did a lot of work to try to distort the image and the name of these families, and I think that's what's hurting him now.
Well, now, what about the drive to create an Islamic State there? There are many Shia Muslims and certainly many of the clerics who really want to bring in the Sharia law, who want to establish an Islamic state, as they have in Iran today. I think that maybe once they had it, they'd be very unhappy. But right now, they've been oppressed as far as the religion. Shia Muslims are in the majority. What are they, 60, 65% of the population?
They have 75%.
Yeah. So if we have a one-man, one-vote, we'll have it one time, and they will establish an Islamic State.
Now, here's some of the big misconception in the Western media about the Shia. First of all, the Shia are currently the moderate Islam, with the few exceptions of the Shia Ayatollahs, including Ayatollah Khomeini, and maybe he's the only one who called for the mixture of political and religious systems. The majority of the Shia, including the Grand Ayatollah Sistani in the city of Najaf, they don't believe in mixing politics and mosque or religion. They actually believe in separation. Ayatollah Sistani issued a fatwa or religious order not to resist the American forces that were advancing on Baghdad. He also issued another fatwa saying that he has no political ambition to shape the kind of government the Iraqi people will choose in democratic elections. Ayatollah Hakim, who is the most politically active Ayatollah, who just came from Iran to Basra and was received by hundreds of thousands of people, he clearly stated that he supports a government that is chosen through the elections by the democratic process. So one of the misconceptions that people have being promoting is that the Shia want an Islamic state like the one in Iran. That is really not true, and that's not correct. And a lot of the indications on the ground that there are a few people who call for that Islamic state, but the majority, the vast majority of the Iraqi Shia basically do not want the Iranian model. They don't think the Iranian model fits in Iraq. Iran is 99% Shia. Iraq is 75%, and it got Kurds, and it got Sunnis, and it got Christians. I think at this point the Shia are supporting democracy in Iraq, and I think the United States government need to review their stand with the Shia, especially the Shia of Iraq and the Shia in general. At this point, the main enemy of Islam and the Shia to Islam and the real Islam and the Christian world is what's called the Wahhabis, the same guys who produced Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and those who just committed the heinous crime in Riyadh and Indonesia and here in September 11.
Now, of course, I think for our listeners, they have to understand the Wahhabis are really, this whole philosophy really begins with Saudi Arabia, doesn't it?
Well, actually, yeah, it does, because Muhammad Abdul Wahhab, the founder, is a Saudi national, and it was developed, it's very fanatic, fundamentalist form, not necessarily related to this family, the Saudi family. It's basically a group or a cult that has hijacked Islam and basically has been committing a lot of crimes in the name of Islam. And we Muslims are rejecting them, and we denounce them, and we denounce everything they did, and we're fighting very hard. So the Shia Muslims, who are the moderate Muslims, is the main ally of the United States in this war against terrorism and against the Wahhabis.
Well, of course, it's the moderate Muslims who, as you say, would be our allies. Unfortunately, the radical form of, I like to differentiate a Mohammedan from, or Muslim from, Islamist, but we can talk about that when we get back. But this is where the real problem is today. Certainly Christians and Muslims can live together peacefully, but of course once they've adopted this radical form of Islam, we're in real trouble. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time I just want to tell you about a few of the things we have, and certainly one of them would be a product that we call Alamax. And Alamax is a made of allicin, which is the active ingredient in garlic. And if you have studied garlic, you know it tends to lower your blood pressure, it tends to lower your cholesterol, it tends to thin your blood. It's got a wonderful effects. It tends to fight infections, and it's been used for years just as a natural product. Well, they've actually refined and taken the allicin, which is the active ingredient in garlic, and put it in pill form. It's called Alamax, and certainly in studies that they've done over in Europe, in England, where they found a double-blind study that the significant decrease in the incidence of cold. So we tried it all last year, and well, we did amazingly well taking Alamax, and everybody else around us was sniffling, and we weren't. I'm in pretty good health considering I'm 74. If you'd like to know more about Alamax, call 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000, and ask about Alamax. And then, of course, I want to tell you about the Big Berkey water filters. Now, the Big Berkey water filter is a water filter. It'll actually carry about 2.5 gallons. It'll filter it from the top to the bottom. It's made of stainless steel. It has ceramic filters that are filled with activated carbon. And, of course, the filter takes out the bacteria. The activated carbon takes out many of the chemicals, but you want to leave many of the minerals there. And so the Big Berkey is a standard. It's been used by missionaries throughout the world for well over 150 years. Big Berkeys are extremely popular. Has been until recently the standard of water filters. And if you'd like to consider getting one, if you want to have water that tastes better, if you don't want to be taking the water with all the chlorine in it, and you'd like to clean that up, a Big Berkey is an excellent, excellent way to go. And, of course, if you'd like to get the Big Berkey, they're regularly $279. We're selling them for $239. If you buy it through us, you get a four-tape, a set, or one of the videos we produce. So call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But I need to tell you, of course, they're not available in either California or in Iowa. However, we do carry another water filter that is available in all states other than Iowa, and that's called a Berkey Light. And these are, instead of being stainless steel, they're transparent. They're made of what they make bulletproof glass out of, and you can drop them out of an airplane. You can actually see the levels of water in this, still filtering 2.5 gallons. And of course, they have a different type of filter. They call it the Black Berkey. And this, instead of filtering the water, really purifies it. And they do a great job as far as cleaning up the water is concerned. And so if you'd like to consider getting a Berkey Light. Now, you can get them with all sorts of fancy. You can get them with lights, and they cost $269. But if you buy a regular one, like $259, if you buy just the Berkey Light, it's $199 plus shipping. We make the same offer. You buy it through us, why you'll get either a video or a four tapes that we produce. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can actually see them there and decide which one you want to get. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. I think once you've seen the Berkey water filters, you'd certainly want to have one in times like these. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Zee Altaee, and he is a Muslim. He is a Shia Muslim. He's come to America. He's been very, very successful here, but he's still concerned about what's happening in his homeland, where his family, much of his family still is. And, of course, we're talking about, of course, the difference between the moderate Muslims and, of course, the Islamic radicals. Is there a growing movement within the Muslim world today? I mean, many people adopting this radical form. I realize that the Shias in your region are of the moderate type, but is there a movement in other areas to embrace this radical form of Islam?
It seems like there is a tilt, especially among young people, to this radical Islam, and one of the main reasons seems to me that the policies of the United States when it comes to Muslim issues, especially in the issue of the struggle and the conflict, Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the people feel, and they have genuine anger about this policy. They feel that the United States government did not have an even-handed policy in this conflict. They always preferred the Israeli government on the Palestinian people, and that genuine feeling is being utilized by this terrorist group of the cult of Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden, and also in some occasions by the dictatorships in the region worried about their future after what they saw happen to Saddam in Iraq.
Well, what about the fact that their American troops were stationed in the Holy Land of Saudi Arabia, not too far from Mecca, Medina? Was this something that was really did inflame many of the young people and many of the people who were in these terrorist organizations?
No, actually, it goes back way before that. In Afghanistan, when these Afghan Arabs or Arab Afghans were fighting the Soviet Union, we were the main supporter of these Arabs. We actually, the CIA, trained these Bin Laden and his groups to fight the Soviet Union back then.
And I think that's really such an important
point. Yeah, and what happened is after the war was finished, we just abandoned Afghanistan. We left, and these people felt like they had been used and abandoned. And they kind of came back trying to revenge. Now, you add to that, they have to make excuses. Like, for example, even they did the Riyadh operation last week, even though the United States announced that they're withdrawing their forces. So it's not about that, actually. These people have killed Muslims before they killed Americans. In Afghanistan, Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda killed almost 30,000 Muslims of Shia descent in Mazar-e-Sharif, and they buried them in mass graves.
And I think that's really such an important point. If you get into the background of the history of the Wahhabi religion, they would not only kill Christians and Jews, they would kill other Muslims if they didn't go along with it.
They killed more Muslims than Christians and
Absolutely.
Jews.
And this is what you have to understand, the fanaticism that is involved in this. And this is very well laid out in a book.
They make their own religion. Their interpretation of the Quran is one of, based on the Wahhabi, Muhammad bin Abdul Wahhab, who's their founder. And it's either black or white. They don't give any room for any flexibility. And they, for example, they consider most of the Sunnis, who are the majority of Muslims, they consider them misguided people, and they consider the Shia, what they call us, rejectionists, and they obviously call the Christians and the Jews infidels. So they pretty much have a problem with everybody, and they feel they're so service-oriented, they don't want to go any deep beyond you know, what they see, their interpretation of the Quran, which is completely wrong.
It certainly is. And, of course, what it's doing is just creating this violent reaction and this intense hatred between, of course, Christian and Jew and Muslim. And somehow we've got to learn how to live together. This is the real problem.
We also have to learn how to distinguish between politicians, governments, and people of faith. When we say Muslims have problem with the Jews or the Christians, this is not an accurate statement. Muslims have problem with the Israeli government and with Sharon, and they have a problem with maybe the government of the United States. They not necessarily, we have to be very accurate in our you know, assumptions. For example, Muslims, according to their holy book, the Quran, we accept the Jews and the Christians as the people of the book. We are required to believe in Jesus and Moses as a part of our faith to be a Muslim. So we should distinguish between the faith and people of the faith and government and politicians.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with our special guest, and his name is Z. Altai'i. I think I've got it down pretty well. And, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, that's 464-8295. 8295, and if you'd like to give us a call, I'm right here at Radio Liberty when we get back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me tell you a little bit about another product, of course, we encourage you to get. And, of course, that would be the Miracle 2 soap products. And Miracle 2 soap is actually a very unusual type of soap. It's not constructed or made by most other soaps. And, of course, it doesn't leave a residue on your skin. But there is a soap and a moisturizing soap. There's a neutralizer. There's a gel. And there is, of course, a lotion. And we can't make any medical claims about these, but we can tell you that many of our listeners tell us wonderful, wonderful stories about what it's done for them, and they praise this. And we have so many people who keep coming back again and again for these products. Now, if you'd like to know more about them, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask about, of course, the Miracle 2 soap products, or if you'd like to get an introductory offer and you can get all five items at a reduced cost, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's Miracle 2 soap. And then, of course, we carry the Phonopoly, and Phonopoly is a board game. It's played like Monopoly. Well, it's really five board games and two bonus games. But, of course, as you play through these, you child learns, and even adult, and I've had people 50 and 60 buy this, who are the victims of a liberal education because they never learned phonics. They never learned the basic rules of spelling. They never learned the basic rules of pronunciation. And so I've had people tell me they've been through it once or twice. They're going to go through it again. They love it. But a wonderful thing for a child. And if you have a child or a grandchild in a government school, you need to get a Phonopoly set. Now, a lot of these actually will cost $300, $400, $500, $600, $800 by the time you get the whole system to teach phonics. This was devised by Myrna Culbraith. The entire program is $139.95. And, of course, you get the two books along with that. We hope that you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, ask for Phonopoly. And then, of course, we want to mention we also carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. And this is based on 22 CDs, and the entire curriculum from grammar school all the way through high school graduation is there. And everything you need, the textbooks, the lesson plans, the lessons, the tests, the answers to the tests, the only thing you have to buy separately are the Saxon mathematic books, and you can get those at a discount from Dr. Robinson. I think they offer a 20% discount. So the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is $199.95 plus shipping. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you'd like to get information on any of these items. But we've had excellent results with all of these products. Give us a call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and now we've been talking to our special guest today, who is Zee Altaï. And you were saying that how are we going to work out this sort of a solution, though, and create a democratic society?
In Iraq?
Yes, in Iraq.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we have to do is build the civil society institutions. Saddam has worked really hard to try to destroy any kind of civil society institutions. He pretty much killed every scientist that is good to the country. He also executed a lot of the religious establishments in Iraq from all different nations and religions. Pretty much tried to destroy the social fabric of the society, including the family and the tribe and the religious establishment. One thing that has to happen immediately is try to reestablish all of these civil society institutions, try to activate the role of the mosque, of the role of the associations, non-government organizations, a lot of these institutions are missing in Iraq, and they can do a lot of the work required at this time in the transitional period. Obviously, so far, thanks God that there is minimum retaliation among the population. There is very little sectarian fight. Seems like, with exception to the electricity and the water, there is no real problem among the people. The regime and his artificial ideology of the Arabist Socialist Party, that ideology didn't really ring a bell in the mentality of the people. What have hurt the people is that he has turned them against each other. In many cases, you've seen brother against his brother, a family member against his cousin, a neighbor against his neighbor. We're trying to establish trust. We should try very hard to try to make the people understand that they have been isolated for almost 34 years from the rest of the world, that the world has changed, and that they really need our help to get them upgraded and updated to the point which they can have a peaceful existence with the surroundings, the neighboring countries, and the rest of the world.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, the problem is that many Muslims and many people there already, of course, don't want Israel in the Holy Land at all. Israel has given up most of the land which they got during the various wars they've contracted, with the idea, of course, that there would be a cessation of the terrorist activity, and there's been no cessation. The incidence of terrorist activity has increased. I mean, the Israelis, or perhaps the United States, gave Arafat, you know, the area there, gave him weapons for his police. And Arafat, instead of trying to stop the terrorism, has encouraged it at every hand. How can you ever have the Jews living in peace with the Palestinians when, of course, Arafat, the leader of the Palestinians, is doing everything he can to destroy and kill as many Jews as he can? How can you ever have them living in peace that way?
Well, first of all, Arafat himself doesn't represent the majority of the Palestinian people, and he is a dictator himself, and he is a corrupted dictator. What is going on is also, there is a lot of killing, without going through the historical facts, there's a lot of killing from Sharon's government on the Palestinian innocent people, including...
There's no question, but there's a lot of killing of the innocent Jews by the Palestinians.
Sure.
So what would you do?
The best position to do in this case, remember, a lot of these Palestinians, some of them who are being killed by Sharon, are Palestinian Christians. Let's not forget that there is a good amount of Palestinian Christians being killed by Sharon. And what we need to do is, as people of faith, what I call us here in this country, people with sense, is try to tell both sides. The president have done a great job. I have a lot of respect. Muslims have a lot of respect for the president for keeping his words. This president, he means what he says. When he said, I'm going to give the map of the road after the Palestinians elect their prime minister, he did. The problem we're having is the Palestinians have accepted the road of the map as it is, without any changes. Until now, Sharon has not accepted the road of the map, and it seems to me that he is going to try to challenge the great president of the United States. I think at this point, we should back up the United States president, and we should tell the president, if Sharon doesn't want to accept the road of the map the way it is, we should basically cut all aids to him. And that's the way it should work.
Well, should we cut off our aid then to Arafat?
Sure. We should cut the aid to Arafat yesterday.
Well, how about then getting things back to where they were before the Oslo Accord? And, of course, the Jews have given up about four-fifths of the land that they held. And yet, of course, the Palestinians have steadfastly refused to stop the terrorist bombing.
Here is what the problem is. Israel is not a democracy. Israel is a Jewish state based on religion. Iran is not a democracy. It's a state based on Islam. We cannot allow and afford religious states in this time that is obviously going to be good to one religion and against the other religion. I think in this time, at this point in the human history, which economy is the best and the most important fact, and we have seen Europe abandoning their nationalism and try to make one Europe, I think there should be one man, one vote policy throughout the Middle East. Anybody, any Jewish guy can live in Baghdad as long as he pays taxes and respects the law. Any Muslim should be able to live anywhere he wants. I think religious states are over, and I think they are something from the past, and I think that applies to a Jewish state as much as applies to a Muslim state.
Well, of course, in many Muslim countries, those Jews are considered a second-class citizen.
Well, that has to change, and that's why we Muslims who are moderate, we have to push hard for changing that. There is nothing in Islam that's against Jewish. Let's take an example, which we all always brag that Iran is one of the worst enemies of Israel. By the same token, Iran has, since the beginning of the revolution, had representation of Iranian Jews in the Iranian Congress, and that has been consistent. How come nobody talks about it?
All right, well, let's go to Roger, who's calling in from Allentown. Alan, Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, thanks. I wanted to ask of your if you share the opinion, as I heard expressed yesterday by one British reporter, and that is in particular both the way, the rationale, Bush's rationale for the war, and also the total failure to come up with any of this proof they claimed they had for the WMDs, combined with the particular way the war was prosecuted, and they had that failure of any containment of the arsonists, the looters, etc. Do you agree with this guy that this is likely to generate 100 Osama bin Ladens?
All right. In other words, basically you're saying that the way the war was prosecuted may inflame a lot of Muslims throughout the world. Is that your question, Roger?
Yeah, and perhaps in particular, apparently the baseless reasons, since there's no WMDs.
Well, that doesn't mean there weren't any. They were all moved into Syria. We have evidence of that from many, many sources. There were WMDs, but they weren't in Iraq at the time. Anything else?
Well, it's just that that's the way it
looks. Okay, fine. So let's get our guest's response to that. Thanks so much, Roger. Now, Roger is asking, well, do you think that there's going to be a lot of feeling throughout the Muslim world that perhaps President Bush's rationale for going in really wasn't entirely forthright, that they might have had another agenda? Do you think that this is going to inflame the Muslims, or do you think they're going to be so happy that Saddam is gone, they're going to say, well, maybe there weren't any weapons of mass destruction, but we had to have an excuse for going in there, because if we didn't, Saddam would still be in power?
Well, we had many reasons to go in there. The Iraqi American Council, whom I'm chairman of, we led the policy here. We actually kept pressing the president to put saving the Iraqi people and putting an end to Saddam's Holocaust on the Iraqi people. That now we see some of these skeletons and these like thousands and thousands and thousands of Iraqis in mass graves, victims of the persecution of Saddam Hussein. We thought that this is enough reason to stop a Holocaust in the 21st century, is enough reason to go there. The president also had at the end, that was one of the reasons, is to change the regime and stop the oppression of the Iraqi people. The weapons of mass destruction, they did exist. Some of them were destroyed. Some of them, they just find them. I think they are doing a good job. They just covered 20% of what all the possible sites. They still have 80% to cover. I'm sure they will find a lot of these mobile labs. Now, as far as the Iraqis, there is a problem with the way things are happening after the war. The war was done very successfully and very fast. After the war, the administration, the civil administration, was not very good, and that's why Jay Garner is no longer in charge, and Bremer is back then. And immediately I see a change today. There was a lot of raids on the Baathists. There was a warning to the people to give up their weapons. That's illegal to have weapons. And also now they can, any looter who resists the looting will be persecuted and kept for 3 weeks and could get shot. Now, having said that, we feel that that should have happened from the first day we went into Baghdad. It seems like we have underestimated the forces. We didn't have enough power. And also, we created a vacuum that had led to the looting of Iraq and people, and it became so dangerous to walk in the streets. That has left a scar in the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people inside Iraq. Basically, we did not have any time to enjoy the victory. We enjoyed it for a few hours when the statue came down. And straight immediately after that, we have been living in a state of mind which is worries again, and and looking at the country burning out and the looting going on. I think, however, the Iraqis will still appreciate what the United States has done. They appreciate these young men and women who, of the coalition forces who gave the ultimate sacrifice. They gave their blood to liberate them. They will take this situation and accept it a million times before they accept Saddam being in power again.
All right. Well, now, of course, as you are, I'm sure, very close to the people in Iraq, there were rumors in the 1990s during the Clinton administration, both 93 and 95, there were efforts on the part of the Iraqi military to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And yet, of course, the Iraqi military who tried to do this were never allowed to, because it would seem that there were people in this country who weren't that interested, at least during the Clinton administration, of getting rid of Saddam Hussein. Has you ever heard any of these rumors?
Yeah, we still have the same problem in Iraq. What these people are telling me, like Jay Gardner has his own views, and then you have Rima with his own views, then you have a military commander with his own views, then General Franks with his own views. The State Department have their own opinions, and the Defense Department have their opinions, and then you have the National Security with their opinions. We are having a serious problem in Iraq because the Iraqis don't know whom to believe and whom to deal with. Everybody they go to, he said, well, don't worry about the other guy. I am the guy who will get you the right answer. We should understand that when we go in the foreign land and when our soldiers' life on the line, that the United States government should act as one body, not as divided body. And this is one of the major problems we're having in Iraq.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think that they should have, the first day, they should have shot looters. They should have said, we're not going to put up with this.
They should have appointed somebody in charge and said, this is the man, he is the civilian, military, you know, whatever guy, right away, the same day they went to Baghdad, not after 3 weeks.
And, of course, there was a man. He was one of Shalabi's associates who appointed himself the mayor mayor of Baghdad. Did he have any popular backing? He claimed he had the backing of the tribal chiefs. Is there any truth to that?
No, this guy is just a businessman trying to make some money.
All right, fine. So he wanted to appoint himself the mayor of Baghdad. But one of the things that seems to be happening is that we're taking a lot of Saddam's people, and for instance, one of Saddam's men, we just appointed the Minister of Health. And I think, at least what I've heard, is that some of the Iraqis are very upset that we're using some of Saddam Hussein's cadre, to try to restore order there. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, they tried to use all Saddam's ex-Baathists. And this guy, when he was asked to sign a paper that he resigned from the Arab Baath Socialist Party and he regret the fact he was a member, he refused. There are 4 million Iraqis who are very much capable outside Iraq. They all are victims of Saddam. They are all very educated scientists. They were not utilized. Only 300 of them were sent this Sunday. Only this Sunday they were sent to Iraq, and they had to train them how against chemical weapons use. And this is something that the red tape is so much in this country that they basically made a big strategic mistake not utilizing the Iraqis in exile. They should have utilized all these capacity and ability and tried to utilize these people inside Iraq, but they didn't.
Well, how can we ever have a democracy, one man, one vote, a system of government there when you have, the Shias make up perhaps 75% of the population, you've got the Kurds, 10% of the population, and the Sunnis maybe 10 or 15%, and then you've got your Assyrian Christians. How could you ever have a one man, one vote? Because the majority in a democracy can always control everything.
Well, the Shia in Iraq, including myself, we are Iraqis first. We live from the furthest point in the north to the furthest point in the south. We have more density in the south, but that doesn't mean we don't live in the north. As a Shia, we consider ourselves first of all Iraqis, then we are a Shia. So we don't vote along our ethnicity. We vote along the parties and their platform and what do they want to offer Iraq. We can care less if the person is a Christian or Sunni, as long as they can come up with a platform that can help the Iraqi people. And this is how Iraqis are. We don't have ethnic problem among ourselves. The regime of Saddam Hussein, he killed the Kurds in the name of the Arabs, and he persecuted and oppressed the Shia in the name of the Sunnis, and that is not the case among the people. the Iraq people, as they have shown, they are pretty much united on their national identity, which is being Iraqis. There is nothing wrong with being Iraqis, and the Iraqis will vote for what's good for Iraq. And the faster we help them and extend our hand to help them, I think that they will elect a government that definitely will be friendly to the United States. We should not have the imagination that just by having forces in Iraq, no matter what's the number of our forces there, that's going to force the Iraqis to like us or love us. What is going to help us there is to win the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, and that comes only by respecting their culture and help them to restore water and electricity and other basic necessities.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much. Our guest has been Azee Altaï, and I appreciate it so much. We'll be talking to you on one of our other programs tomorrow morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll be back here in just a few moments and, of course, develop these ideas much more. And if you want to get in touch with our guest, well, you give us a call, and we'll get you in touch with him. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Radio Liberty. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and of course, I just want to mention a couple of things that we have. One of them is the solution to one of our major problems in the United States is for the average American to learn about our heritage of freedom under God. Because America was founded as a Christian country. Now, that's never mentioned today. Anybody says that will be attacked by the controlled media. So you realize it must be true. But if you go back and you read the original documents of this country, you read what our founding fathers said, you realize that every one of our state constitution, every single state constitution mentions God. But you're never told this in school. In fact, how many listening to this audience, in the audience today, have ever read the Constitution of the State of California? How many of you? In the first paragraph, it talks about God. So you have to understand that America was founded as a moral and religious nation. Now, there's a wonderful program, and it's available through the Institute on the Constitution, and of course, in with 12 half-hour programs, and everything you have to do is get a group together, show the video, and then they have the questions for you to ask. They have the transcript of the talk, and in 12 half-hour sessions, Dr. John Ijmo will teach you what the enemies of freedom don't want you to know. Contact the Institute of the Constitution by calling 410-760-6759. That's 410-760-6759. Or go to their website, iotconline.com. That's IOTC for Institute on the Constitution Online.com. Are you willing to invest to try to save this country? Are you willing to become involved in the effort to educate the American people about what America is about, our godly heritage, and how we lost it? Well, you'll get information in this course you'll never get even in the finest colleges today, because this is censored. You're not supposed to know. And then I just want to mention we're moving into what I believe is very difficult times. The Third World War is already underway. And, of course, there are going to be terrible things, I fear, will happen in this country. I hope I'm wrong. But in case they do, are you prepared? Well, you can make your preparations by, of course, getting hold of a Ready Reserve food catalog. That's a Ready Reserve food catalog. And, of course, you find out what you need. And then, of course, there's all sorts of other things you need to begin making preparations right now for the unthinkable. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for a Ready Reserve food catalog, and we'll send it to you. And if you see things there that you want, you get it back to us. We'll send it on in to our friend David Sibley and get your order filled. But I think that anybody today who sees what's going on over in Iraq and thinks that similar things could not happen here in America that's turned its back on God is mistaken. Give us a call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention, if you're interested in any of the Big Berkey products, we work with Jim Shepherd, who is the Berkey man, and of course, if you'd like to learn more about various Berkey products, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And if you decide to buy either one of the Berkeys to us or get all your replacement filters, why, we'll be glad to give you either a free video or a free four-tape set. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because we have a unique opportunity. We started with one station in 1994, and now we have outlets on over 55 outlets. That's satellites, and that's shortwave, and that's internet, but all different outlets all across America. And stations, our weekend program is heard on 35 stations. I wish we had 600 stations, but we want to be able to say what we believe. So we pay for the time on almost all of our stations, and well, it's an expensive proposition. We're dependent upon those in the audience who believe in what we're doing. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And then, of course, if you would like to, of course, get more information on our ministry, why, you can certainly give us a call at that number. We hope many of you will decide you want to go to our website, which is RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down our programs. You can link to the other networks we're on. You can listen to our archive programs. We invite you to go there and pull down our newsletters in the past, and you'll get a wonderful, wonderful education if you do. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and of course our March newsletter goes into the background of the war with Iraq and a little group, the cabal that controls our government today. It's called the Project for the New American Century. Their website is on our letter. Of course, many quotations from their website on our letter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for a free copy of the newsletter. Of course, we hope you'll want to subscribe to the newsletter at $25 a year, but I would be glad to send you a free copy if you haven't had a copy before. And then, of course, we certainly want to remind you that you can join the Radio Liberty family for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more. That's $20 a month or more. You get our four best tapes of the month. You get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you're helping us do what we do, and that is, of course, to educate people about the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And, of course, hopefully many people want to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. And we ask you to pray for our boys overseas, because they're still in a very dangerous situation in Iraq and all of the cities there. And there are fanatics there who will seek acts of violence. And I understand that, you know, our boys are not free to move around freely in the city as we wish they were. They're going to have to restore order there. They're going to have to get responsible people in positions of authority. My fear is they're going to put a lot of Saddam Hussein's people right back into power as they were before, and there's going to be a lot of resentment if that should take place. And then, of course, we ask you, of course, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you again, and then we're going to have just a wonderful, wonderful program talking about what's happening in America. And, of course, about what happened on 9/11, that incident that got us involved in this whole quagmire and set off World War III. And if you don't think we're in World War III, you haven't heard what the head of the Israeli Mossad said on 60 Minutes 2 or what James Woolsey has said. We are. The world will never again be the same. So until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.